Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, members. We would also like to extend our welcome to the Department of Provincial and Local Government. Welcome. We also welcome our visitors, people who have come to observe part of the meeting. Today we are going to take a briefing to complement partly our visit to the nodes, the three nodes that we visited, Kalahari, Alexandra, and Madhya Pofung. In those interactions with the municipalities involved and departments, we did not give the department an opportunity to speak largely, because we also felt that they will get an opportunity to talk to us here. At that stage, we preferred to hear directly from people who government works with at the other spheres and to see their account of these programs, the urban renewal program in Gauteng, as well as the sustainable rural development in the other two areas. It was important because it enabled us to have a better sense of what's happening, and that in our oversight, be able to interact with the information that we received in a little more informed way. So thank you for agreeing to come and talk to us, and we now hand over to you to lead and introduce your team. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson, honourable members, for giving us the opportunity to talk in a lot more detail today about the nodes. I'm Bernadette Leon. I'm the acting DDG for the Urban and Rural Development Branch for another few days. I also want to use the opportunity to introduce the incumbent, Ms. Nelly Lester. She has not yet formally started at UPLG, but we thought this would be a good opportunity to introduce her to members. She will be starting on the 1st of July. And then I'll ask the rest of the team to introduce themselves.
Morning. My name is Lucas Mdaga. I'm in the Integrated Sustainable Rural Development Program.
My name is Lisa Swaku. I'm in the DPLG Office of the Caricature.
Morning, Barbara Mdivakwane, DPLG, Marketing and Communication, URP.
Good morning, I'm Sibongile Malide from the DPLG, Marketing and Communication of the two programs.
Morning, I'm Leah Moto. I'm with Urban Renewal Program.
Ma'am Leon, I want to first start by congratulating all of you who did not use the acronym and to request those who did not to do so in future. We don't accept acronyms, they delay our work, even if you assume that we ought to know who we deal with them every day and they change every day, and we don't want to allow any delay caused by confusion. So please, anyway, especially because you are in marketing and communication, spell it out. We do give you air time to do that. You don't pay for it, so it's free service. We have had interesting debate and discussions about that issue. It's not a trivial matter. It's a very important one. We are in the business of communicating to ourselves, but also to the public in general, and they must hear us set time. That's the basic principle. So, being a communicator, I'm passionate about that, and I plead with all of us to do that regularly. Thank you very much, Ms. Leo.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will go straight into the presentation. The presentation that has been handed out to members is quite detailed. I will be doing a slightly shorter version here on the understanding that the detailed information is available in the pack. We've been asked to talk specifically today about national and provincial sector support. And then we've also been asked to summarize, which is quite a huge task, all the research, the critical important research that we've done in the last year. Those are the impact assessments of the four nodes, the two rural and urban ones that we've talked about a lot. And today I'll talk a bit more in detail about the findings of those impact assessments. And then I've just changed it around and we'll talk secondly about the lessons learned that we've done for the urban renewal program and the findings of that. And then lastly, the third piece of research, which is the economic profiling project, and I will talk in a little bit more detail about that because a lot of the work coming out of that project is going to be influencing what we will be doing in the next few years. And lastly, I've tried to summarize just a few key points for intervention, and I'll highlight which are the things that we have incorporated into our work program and program of action for the next few years as CPLG, and highlight one or two key points where we possibly need support from portfolio committee. National and provincial support, I've summarized at a very high level. We have a significant amount of information about project support, budget support from the different sectors, which is not really user-friendly to summarize for a forum like this. So we're trying to give an overview of the quality of support that we are getting from national and provincial sector support, sector departments. At national level, we have a interdepartmental task team that meets on a quarterly basis and is represented by all the spheres of government. We normally have quite good representation at these meetings. Some of the challenges, we'll do very mild naming and shaming today. Some of the challenges we are having, for example, would be DTI, science and technology. We can say that over the last few years...
The point I was illustrating earlier on, it would be interesting why you're not making the last one.
Because I actually will have to ask my colleague what that means. I don't know.
I also did not know what it is. I couldn't...
Horton,
you see, same. So easy. I couldn't make it up, and exactly the same reason as it happened. That, you see, we forget... We don't realize how significant those things are. And I didn't anticipate it, but you just illustrated the point I was making. Just a moment.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Sports and recreation, yeah.
Sports and recreation.
Yes.
We have good support and clear contribution at nodal level from agriculture, from health, dwarf, which is water and forestry, minerals and energy, social development, housing, Department of Labor, Department of Transport, environment and tourism, and communication. So I think largely over the last few years, you can definitely see a significant change in the support that we are getting from the national sector departments, with some small pockets of departments where there has not really been that significant change. We introduced the idea of the financing protocol in 2005, which is approved by Cabinet, and the financing protocol is really giving us a mandate to work with sector departments to get them to have medium-term MTF, medium-term expenditure framework plans for the nodes and budgets for the nodes. So, Chairperson, overall, the work that we've been doing with sector departments, we would like to say that we have made a big contribution to introducing sector departments for the first time in the last few years to what it means to work with local government in a hands-on way, what it means to plan with local government and what it means to support local government. And many of the sector departments such as water and forestry and environment and tourism that are now known as good support departments to local government in general have cut their teeth really about how to work with local government in the node. Provinces, Limpopo province, we have generally good support. I'm combining the provincial support at a technical level and at a political level. We have the support of the Office of the Premier in terms of the nodes. Generally, the problem that we face everywhere, change of administrative staff, the provincial coordinators of these programs who sit in the provinces, play a very critical role. If there's not continuity, if there's change and shift continuity, it takes us back a little bit because they have to be rebriefed. And in FOCO, that is also the case. Political champions at a national level, members might remember that all ministers and national ministers have been delegated a political championship role in each node. And I'm also going to give an assessment of how active they have been. In Limpopo, not very active. And we have the list of who the champions are, and we can talk about that a little bit later. Mpumalanga, weak provincial and technical support, poor coordinating structure, and also weak political championship of the program. This is a province that we will obviously be focusing on more intensively this year. Northern Cape, new provincial coordinator, no coordinating structure, but very, very good political championship support from the ministers and deputy ministers who have been assigned. They meet on a regular basis, and we often hold the team of ministers and deputy ministers up as a good practice example of what political championship means. Western Cape has good technical and political support from the province. There has been political championship visits in the rural nodes with absolutely no visits in the political urban nodes. And the Premier's office at the moment is trying to coordinate the national political champions for Khayelitsha and Little Plain to come to the Western Cape to have a working session with the province and local government in this month, coming month of July. The Eastern Cape have set up a dedicated unit in the province to support. The people are in place now. There are some challenges with the capacity of the staff in the unit, but we have employed a technical expert from GPLG, has recruited a technical expert that we have placed in the office, in the Eastern Cape Provincial Office, to work with that team and strengthen their ability to support the URCNIFIDC. All the nodes have had at least one political champion visit between February and April this year. The Free State officials have been appointed and are located in the node. It's a provincial official that the province has appointed and placed in the node. Provincial coordinators have changed almost six times since 2003. The Free State is a bit of a challenge for us because of the lack of continuity. But we also have to learn strategies of how to deal with that and mediate to make sure that it doesn't have as big an impact when people change. There has been one political champion visit since April. KwaZulu-Natal, there has been a few changes in that the program has moved to the Rural Development Unit, and this is together with I think Mpumalanga, Free State, and KwaZulu-Natal. Those would be the three provinces that we would focus on in the coming years to provide more support. Now I'm moving on to the impact assessment, and what I will be doing is just give a high-level summary of the findings in those three five performance areas. The details per node would be in the detailed presentation in the pack. So for each node, whether it is Motherwell, Alexandra, Alfred Nzor, and Maluti Apapung, the details of each of those key performance areas are actually in the pack that have been handed out. The impact assessments that we did last year, July, we call them preliminary impact assessments because 5 years, 6 years, people say is a very short time within which to do impact assessments. Normally you would wait at least 10 years. That's why we call them preliminary impact assessments. In terms of basic service delivery, there has generally been an improvement in all four nodes, and the statistics that is noted there attest to that. We have found that limited household incomes constrains the use of services such as electricity and the free basic amount that is being given to families because of a lack of income, just having no income. These studies were done firstly by doing a statistical analysis of available information. Then it was layered with very basic perception surveys that we have done. Of course, we don't have the funding to do large-scale household surveys in the URPI policy. We are not set up to do that kind of intensive research. So these impact assessments, with these very basic perception surveys, asking communities how they have perceived the changes and the impact it's had on their lives. So we found that expectations shift and increase as soon as basic delivery takes place. Communities then expect higher levels of services and often expect better quality. So, for example, in Alexandria, people would immediately forget that they have received water and start demanding to have better quality, more water, or no power outages. And so when we hear people say that, you know, I haven't really been benefiting, we have to dig a little bit deeper, because you often find that there has been access provided, but people's expectations have shifted, and they're now looking at quality aspects. And we don't measure often quality aspects. We measure numbers that have been delivered. In the urban nodes, most of the funding went on extending and upgrading bulk infrastructure and maintenance of old and neglected infrastructure. This underground investment is not much appreciated by communities, and we saw that in Alexandria specifically. The implications of this is that the housing program and infrastructure program's investment can hinder or help the rate and the pace of service delivery. Communities are concerned with quality and affordability, and we are not measuring those aspects of service delivery often. More attention is needed to improve the incomes and ability to pay for services. So when we've done these assessments, we drew out some implications, and those implications, of course, in the new work that we are starting, we've used that to inform some of the new programs that we have started for the URPI, especially our new focus on economic development in the nodes, given that these studies have shown in all four nodes that is a key area that we need to focus on a lot more. Housing. Blockage is caused by the lack of land and the eligibility of communities. The need for relocation can take up to 5 years to resolve. I think this is something that we did not anticipate when the program was announced, and it's possibly an important lesson that we have learned for the future in terms of expectation setting. We did not anticipate that it would take so long to package programs, and the lead-in times would be so long, so huge. So we, at the beginning, promised much quicker rate of delivery, and we didn't anticipate that there is a lot of preparation needed. The current funding model for building rental housing meant that rental housing was constructed, but it's unaffordable to the community. This is the case especially in Alexandria, where the rental model that local authorities are meant to use in terms of national housing policy produces a rental unit that is not affordable to the average person in the township. You often have to have an income of 3,500 or 7,500. So these units were built, but was not really appropriate to the needs of the community. That, I think, has changed recently. We saw when we went to the node that there's a lot more innovation happening now in terms of the rental housing model. In Maluti, Afrifung, some of the communities felt that the housing program undermines their traditional family structures and lifestyles. These are some of the comments that communities make, that the housing policy is often not flexible enough to allow people to choose the way they want to design and cluster homes and the way they want to live. Housing was communicated as a key deliverable, often in the URP IFRDP, while in most cases this deliverable at the scale was not possible at the scale and the pace that was promised. So this has got a lot to do with the way we communicated when the programs were introduced a few years ago, that we put a lot of emphasis on housing and not so much on the aspects of community empowerment, community building. The implications of this for us, and I think for government programs in general, is around communication, the importance of communicating clear and consistent and realistic delivery targets. Very important for managing community expectations. If the housing targets are not met now in the URP IFRDP, it affects negatively the community's view of the entire development process in the node. Land transfers and land redistribution delays delivery. And then I've mentioned before that the implications are the long lead-in time for, especially in the urban townships, for the packaging of housing programs. Economic development, unfortunately we found that the LED support that has been provided to date, there has been no shortage of projects, funding support, but they have not had any significant impact on the long-term livelihoods and sustainable job creation in the node. And that has not been for lack of trying, I think, from a variety of departments. There has been short-term improvement in income, mainly through the infrastructure programs, such as MIG and housing, and then through projects aimed at improving food security, the food garden projects that education runs with schools, social development runs. The capacity of districts and provinces to plan and stimulate economic growth we found was quite poor. Most projects were of a poverty alleviation nature and relied heavily on the municipality to subsidize these projects to ensure sustainability. So there was not very good distinction between social welfare type of LED programs, which require continuous investment by a municipality or by government, and distinguishing between a really viable economic development project. That we will find, I think, in each and every one of the nodes, that these are characteristics, and not just in the nodes, but in many other municipalities. The implications of this is that there are very high expectations from communities to obtain jobs through the development program. But these expectations cannot be met and put pressure on the development program. Every project becomes contested because it's community see this as the only way to access the employment, and that the employment challenges of communities will be solved in the node, but that is not necessarily the case. Communities could take more responsibility for the management of LED projects with a social welfare focus, with government reducing its involvement, focusing more on oversight and startup support. Economic development strategies for the nodes need strengthening. The skills profile of communities, we felt there is not a comprehensive plan of how to intervene in improving the skills profile of communities. We also felt there's a need for better integration at nodal level, a one-point access for potential entrepreneurs where entrepreneurs can come to get a range of support services. This is being, I think if you go to any of the nodes, you will find that there isn't a shortage of support interventions, but it's the clustering and the coherence of those interventions that communities might be a kilometer away from a support center but will not know about it and will not know how to access it and might have to go to 3 or 4 or 5 different places to get support if they want to start up a business. So it's more about the accessibility of those support services. Justice, crime prevention and safety. We found that there has been no consistent downward trend in crime in the urban nodes. In terms of justice, crime prevention and safety, we focused a lot more on the urban nodes because if members would remember, one of the reasons the urban nodes were identified was because they were priority crime areas in 2001. Safety is still seen as a high priority concern for nodal residents. There has been very good response from the Department of Justice and staff in terms of putting infrastructure on the ground. Virtually all of the urban nodes have very new upgraded police stations, and a lot of effort has gone into making sure that that is there. And there has also been effort by the Department of Justice to make sure that magistrate court and justice facilities are brought closer to communities in the nodes. You would see that in Motherwell, you would see that in Kailicha and Mitchell's Plain. So in that sense, there has been success bringing infrastructure and access to services closer to communities. But of course, beneficiaries have concerns more about the quality of services, issues like the perceived lack of professionalism, understaffing, poor response time. So, as I've said already, there has been good response in terms of the upgrading of policing and justice infrastructure. Crime prevention initiatives, however, are still uncoordinated and duplicated by a range of stakeholders at the nodal level. And cooperation between various agencies are needed with more focus on community awareness, confidence building, and crime prevention. And since we have done this work, I can say that TAC has been on a roadshow of all the provinces where, together with our units, they have met with the policing sector stakeholders from the nodes and from the provinces and from national level, and tried to introduce the policing community, station commissioner and everyone working in the sector through the process of IDPs and planning and working with municipalities in the nodes. This has been happening, I think, since last year, and the last one will be here in the Western Cape in this month. Cooperative governance. National and provincial line functions coordination with nodal priorities remain a challenge, although I said earlier on that we definitely have had successes with some departments. Positive results with the linkages between community development workers, ward committees, and community liaison officers. We saw this especially in Alphonsville and Motherwell. Members will see when you go through the detailed presentations in some of the nodes, like Malusi Afosung, this would be a big complaint. There is no coherence between these different systems, community development workers, ward committees, community liaison officers. But in cases like Arthur and Motherwell, we found that they have been able to achieve that cooperative working, and with those three support systems working well together. In terms of cooperative governance, also, it took at least 2 years to put in place the framework and the systems and the processes for effective implementation impacting on the delivery targets. So this is, again, just a reminder that there is a lead time when these programs are announced that one has to allow for in terms of setting up of systems and management units. And in this case, it was at least a minimum of 2 years that it took us to get support systems in place at provincial and local level. The implications of this is the multiple forums and engagements to facilitate coordination must be streamlined. This is the new challenge for us. When we started doing sector coordination and having sector coordination forum, we were taking the lead in terms of getting sectors to work closer with local government. Intergovernmental relations is now legislated. We have legislation. We have to now start mainstreaming and our coordination functions into these IGR structures. And this is the project that we are starting this year to make sure that the IWRC coordination happens within the legislative IGR forums, meaning the provincial coordinating forum and the district coordinating forums in the node. Performance contracts of officials could be used as a tool to ensure commitments are made to the node and that these commitments are met. This is just a suggestion that we have been making for a while, that a lot of effort is made into obtaining commitments from departments, but it's holding departments and officials accountable to delivering on those commitments that is a challenge for us, because we do not work with sector departments with legislation behind us. We cannot force a sector department to support the nose. So when it comes to delivery on that, it's a challenge. I've talked earlier on about role clarification. And then lastly, an important point is that the ward committees need support and training to assist them in their communication function. We found that this is a very neglected area in the nose, but maybe generally that we have to put a lot of effort from this year working with ward committees to equip them and ward councillors, equip them with the communication skills and information to be able to get the message across the community better. That is also something which this year is going to influence the way we work. That is a summary of the impact assessment. The lessons learned for the urban renewal program, and then just a note that the IFRDP lessons learned is currently underway. It is likely to be finalized by July. We have a first draft report, and this report will be ready in July. In the lessons learned study, which has been published and made available, there's documenting of more than 100 lessons that is supported by case studies and stories from the nodes about good practice and bad practice in the urban nodes. But a very, very high level summary of all of those lessons, we've tried to cluster it under an institutional process of governance and so on. Under institutional processes, we found that institutionalizing of programs like the IFRDP and URP is crucial. Goodwill and individual program champions are very useful, because that is the way we've been working up to now, very much on goodwill, developing good working relationships with provinces and sector departments. But those relationships are very time intensive to service, and it's not a sustainable way to manage integration and cooperation. So institutionalizing those relationships is important. So we're suggesting there that the program must be seated within institutional structures, contractual arrangements, and clear lines of accountability. And in the lessons learned book, there are some examples of where this has been tried. We also find that the area-based approaches have given us the greatest focus and coordinated intervention. I think the success of this area-based intervention, we can say, is generally accepted now and is being replicated naturally without being given a presidential focus. In Gauteng, it is now normal practice. There's a 20 priority township program. There's the Soweto focus, Cape Town focus. In Nelson Mandela, they have started to announce a new node called Helenville, which they are going to use the same model of Motherwell to implement in. And in most of the provinces, they are starting to look at a new generation of township renewal program using the lessons that they have learned in the URP. And I think that is what the intention was when we started the program, is to plant a seed that it's a good model to have an area focus to get the whole of government to commit. And it's that the fact that the model is being rolled out, I think, speaks for itself. Governance, sound and active leadership at political and administrative level is critical. The participatory structures must be resourced and capacitated for effective community ownership. It's a challenge we found in most of the nodes that these development forums that are set up and ward committees do not really have the resources to function. And it is important for funding to be made available, for basic funding for those structures to be operational. We also found that learning by doing requires parallel learning must take place alongside implementation. This is something that we neglected, I think, in the beginning because we were so under so much pressure to deliver and put systems in place. But with hindsight, we realized that one of the systems that is important to put in place is this very deliberate learning and knowledge exchange system from the beginning to make sure that there is continuous discussions and talking and visits and conversations going on between pilots so that people talk to each other. From this year, we've already started piloting at last year between some of the nodes. This is going to be a major focus in the urban renewal program, starting off and then later in the year in the IFRDP, where we are planning to set up a structured knowledge exchange program. We already have some activities which we will slot into that program, but have a very deliberate two-year program of action with set learning exchange activities for the next 2 years that we can make sure that we facilitate that exchange. Service delivery. I've mentioned that one of the lessons we've learned is urban renewal is not only about housing, and care has to be given to finding a balance between infrastructure and human development related activities. We always use Inanda for Marshall project as a good practice model of this, where they have put a lot of effort into the softer aspects of urban renewal, working with community-based organizations, NGOs, artist groups, all community groupings, and actually providing funding support and training support to those groups, funding of community health workers. More so, I think, you know, anywhere else in the node, they have a good model of how to get the softer aspects of urban renewal, how to get that working. And I think what it's helped them to do is the strong community structures and relationships that they have built is giving them a bit of space to be a bit slower about the infrastructure development. So the fact that housing development is not happening at such a significant pace is not as contested as in Inanda for Marshall, I think partly because of the strong relationships that have been built with communities. Without control over the housing budget, cities have difficulties meeting delivery targets set by them. I think this is something that we are all aware of. Housing drives a lot of the development in the townships, but the cities do not have control over that function, budgets and in other ways. Land identification for housing and preparation and servicing for township development requires support from all of government. It's not something the municipality can do on its own. State-owned enterprises and parastatals must make their landholdings available for development that will benefit the nodal communities. All the cities with nodes will say the same thing about the enormous difficulties they have getting state-owned enterprises and parastatals to commit themselves to making landholdings available, to bring the poorest of the poor closer to opportunities. It can take 5 to 10 years of negotiations and consultations for cities to reach any kind of breakthrough. And to reach a breakthrough, you really need an intergovernmental response. Cities need to be backed up by national governments and provinces if they're wanting to have success.
in this area. Local economic development. We found in the nodes that all the nodes have tried to put a big focus on the use of emerging contractors. But in the absence of any good model of experience of how to do this, this has caused quite a few challenges. We found now that resources must be committed upfront for the adequate supervision, training, and support for emerging contractors. Municipalities in the nodes did not anticipate the intensive support that is required to manage emerging contractor programs in terms of the funding that it costs to manage these emerging contractors and the technical expertise that is required. We have found also that using public investment in a coordinated manner to prompt private sector response has definitely proven to be a successful strategy. And we have real life examples on the ground today in Bridge City, Komashu, and Kalisha and Silk Plain to show that this model really works. But for the future, I think support must be provided to other nodes to implement the strategy, but using the IGR structure to get binding commitments from other spheres of government. The Kailicha, Little Plain, Bridge City, Kwamashu will tell us that those successes have been achieved, but was enormously difficult to get buy-in from the different sector departments and from national and provincial government to buy into that vision of upgrading the township. It took at least five years. If we wanted to replicate that model, but not for it to take 5 years, but quicker, we can use intergovernmental relations, protocols and agreements possibly to for the future to make those things happen quicker. And then the other lesson that we've learned is that townships are not and can't be self-sufficient. Linkages with nearby commercial areas are important. So, for example, in some of the townships when training programs are done, we often used to look at what the job opportunities are in the township. So people are trained on construction skills to benefit from some of the projects that are happening. But we found that was a bit short-sighted, and we need to look at the bigger picture. What are the growth expanding sectors in the metro or the cities as a whole? And assist people in the nodes to get training to help them to access those opportunities. One example, which is not a node, is Cape Manor in Durban, where when the regional hospital, the training hospital, was being built on the outskirts of Cape Manor, a lot of the training that was happening within Cape Manor was around equipping communities to be able to work in that hospital. Catering skills, nursing skills. So it's just looking a little bit outside of the township to when it comes to training. If we look inside of the node, we're not really going to be able to get much benefit out of the construction program. Financial viability. I've talked already about preparation funding. When the programs were set up in 2001, there was a lot of debate about whether we need a special fund, whether we don't need a special fund. We still, up to this day, thought that we would have made significant strides if we did have a special fund. And the fact that National Treasury has to set up a 3 billion rand township renewal fund after 5 years of the program makes one think that maybe they started thinking in the same way. But what we did manage to get is within the equitable share, there is a small window which we have managed to get additional funding to each and every one of the nodes for the last few years. That funding is available for institutional support, setting up support systems. In the past, the Finance Control Commission has declared that this is not really the way to use the equitable share to put conditionalities in it, and they're not much in agreement with that, but it has been a way of getting funding to the nodes to help them to employ staff and put systems in place. So preparation funding is critical during the first 24 months of the URP to establish project management units and undertake essential planning and to leverage delivery budgets from line functions. It helps to have a little bit of money to get people to talk to you. If you say, if I give $1 million and you give $3 million, it's better than saying, you know, Department of Transport give us $4 million. So that kind of leverage funding initially we thought was very important. It was difficult to work with artists, but we've managed through some of the conditional grants to get agreements to such as the agriculture and then the MIC fund to get funding to the nurse. The private sector is underinvested in the township. Government must be able to direct this interest by careful packaging and marketing of projects to get maximum benefits for the area. Our economic profiling program, I think, is a direct response to this, to help us as the DPLG and government to be more involved in the packaging and marketing of opportunities in the nodes. As in the past, we used to be a bit hands-off, and so if we just work really hard, the private sector will somehow wake up the next morning and see the potential. But we've realized that we need to do a lot more pointing in the right direction, packaging opportunities, marketing opportunities. And that is what we are doing now with the nodal profiling project. And then we talk about the dedicated program funding for the URP, which in the light of the fact that Treasury has set up now the Neighbourhood Partnership Development Grant, is possibly not such a big need anymore. It would have been useful if it was there 5 years ago, and we could have driven the program in that way. We are now building a close working relationship with them, and we are trying to design joint programs with National Treasury for township renewal. And then lastly, just to mention that many of these lessons that have been learned in the IFRDP and URP were incorporated into something that I'm not sure if members have seen it before. It's called a Framework for Managing Joint Programs. It was a joint DPSA and DPLG project that was approved, I think it was December 2005 by Cabinet, and it's also included in the IGR toolkit. So about 2 years ago, the GNA cluster thought there was a need for us to look at how can we, what are the systems we can put in place to manage joint programs better. And that framework is built on our experiences and the EPWP, these three programs. Lastly, the economic profiling problem. Some people have asked why we are putting such a big focus on economic development. We are not the DTI as DPLG. Our response is always that the IWP URP is meant to be a coordinating program, almost a conscience of sector departments to get them to work better and more appropriately in the nodes. So that is the way we normally operate. In certain sectors where we find there is quite a lot of dysfunctionality, like economic development support, where we are still struggling and trying to put systems and support as government of how to work with the nodes. Where there is a lot of confusion and dysfunctionality, it makes sense for us to get involved directly and lead the way and allow sectors like DTI and other owners of these processes to watch and learn, and hopefully it will influence the way they work. So this is the reason why we are getting a lot more involved in the economic development aspect of the Rural Nodes Party. And then secondly, mainly because the impact assessments have shown us that of all the areas in which we have intervened, our economic development support strategy up to now has not given us the results that we have asked for. So we are hoping this new intervention will be able to get us where we want to be. So we are responding to the fact that we found there's very little and unreliable information about economic development, the project-specific focus that we're finding in the nodes, the limited economic productive capacity. So in response to all of these challenges, about a year ago, we developed a program of action for building productive and sustainable nodal economies. This program of action tries to provide an understanding of the economic potential in the nodes. Those, the product of that is the economic profile, which we have just completed. The program of action is also trying to identify opportunities for public and private sector investment. The product of that is what we call the investment atlas, which I will also explain a bit later, which is a list of potential investment projects that we have extracted through this research process, potential private investment projects. We also look at barriers and constraints to economic activity, and then we make recommendations on the strategic interventions to improve the nodal business climate. So the work that we have been doing has it's intended to influence two groups. Firstly, the private sector, to assist them to understand better the potentials in the nodes, guide them towards investing in the nodes. And then secondly, maybe more importantly, the public sector, to be able to be a lot more specific, for example, with the Department of Agriculture, with CGI, with transport. If you're going to be supporting in Ugu, for example, what is it exactly that you need to do? And we're hoping to provide that kind of direction now. This is just an example of what we will find in a nodal profile. And then in each of the profiles are summarized in this way, what needs to be done, solutions to constraints and investment opportunities. So I will just extract one as an example. In Kanyakudi, a large landmark tourism investment is needed. The agriculture potential of the area needs to be realized through provision of funding for local subsistence farmers to upscale. That's just one example. But in the pack you will find that for each of the nodes, there is a summary of the constraints and the investment opportunities. And then for the urban nodes as well. Linked to the profile, we also have what we call an investment atlas. After all of that analysis of constraints and opportunities, we have extracted key projects that could form the basis for kickstarting the nodal economy. This is not the beginning and the end of economic growth in the nodes, but it is, a start, a few projects that we think could form the basis for kickstarting the nodal economy. And each of these projects are also profiled. We describe the project, economic rationale, status of available documents, is it an idea, is there a business plan, who are the contact people, what stage, is it a project that has been submitted somewhere, stuck somewhere in a file, and needs some pushing for it to go further. So it's an assessment of the status quo of that idea and that project. For the rural nodes, we have identified 88 investment opportunities in general, overall. And these opportunities have all been profiled. So each have a one-page profile with some photographs and then almost a mini status report of the state of this potential investment project. So there's the profile, there's the investment atlas, and then there's the last product out of this research is what we call more direct guidance for sector departments. What does this mean for GTI, the profile for Ugu? What does it mean for GTI, the profile for Ugu? What does it mean for Department of Agriculture? Trying to be a lot more specific. So in the detailed presentation that I provided, you would also find, for example, there's an action list for the Department of Agriculture and an action list for DTI. So for Alfred and Zul, for example, the Department of Agriculture is highlighted to them that they need to initiate a mentorship program between established and emerging farmers. So it might be something general that they are doing, but it could form the basis for us for having a much more direct agreement with the Department of Agriculture exactly what is it they're going to be doing in the nose. Also, Alfred Nizor, aggregate emerging farmers and decrease input and transportation costs, prioritize the support for investment opportunities in biodiesel and agro-processing. Just one example, you will find that for every... We've done that for agriculture, we've done that for environmental affairs and tourism, we've done it for land affairs, for ourselves, Department of Provincial and Local Government, because of the significant levers that we are sitting with as CPLG, trade and industry, and then there's just a general overview of what this means for other government departments. This is the most recent part of the work. The profiles are completed. We are busy publishing them. The investment atlas is packaged. We're busy publishing it. This last part of the work where we are starting to analyze of what this means for the rest of government, specific departments, still will need a little bit more work. What do we do with this information and how do we get this to sector departments? So lastly, all of this work we've done on economic profiling and investment was intended to act as a decision support tool for government and other stakeholders who would like to understand and act on the economic character and potential for each node. Our minister always warns us that we mustn't overestimate how much, for example, Department of Agriculture or DTI know about what they have to do in Zululand. He says, you are giving too much credit. You have to tell them exactly. We have to bring the facts, the real facts of what they must do. And this is what we are trying to do with this work we are doing. So we're hoping to present this work to Cabinet Lekgotla. It's one of our program of action activities that we report on. We are looking at people design and institutional support mechanism. We're now trying to dig a bit deeper into the institutional support environment. There is no shortage of bodies that have been set up. LED support agencies at local, provincial, national level. There's no shortage of them. Now we're trying to dig deeper and see what are the factors that make them to be not as effective in the nose as we're looking at suggestions and recommendations on that. It's a separate piece of research that we are doing. In March, we had a knowledge exchange workshop. We called all the economic development support agencies in all the nodes together in Pretoria, the nodal agencies at district level, provincial and national level, together with DTI, because DTI is often the mother organization of some of those agencies. And we just had an exchange talking about the different models they are using, what works, what doesn't work. And we were amazed by how useful it was to the agencies themselves. We were not aware that there is no culture of regular meeting and sharing of information. And they found it extremely useful to have those kinds of platforms. And the information we've gained there, we are using in our investigations of what can we do to help to make these agencies more effective. We are hoping to have a national nodal economic development in Daba, where we're wanting to launch all of this work, this kind of new look at nodal economies, the state of nodal economies and the investment projects. And the activity list for sector departments. We've made a proposal to the minister and we're waiting for a date to launch all of this information publicly. We're also going to start working on the state of the nodal economies report, have a kind of one publication where we pull all of this together And most of this work we are doing with the Business Trust, as you would have known. They are our support partner in this process. And then we, lastly, a very new initiative, we are working with National Treasury, the Neighborhood Partnership Development Grant Unit, ourselves, and we've pulled in the Cities Network and DBSA, and about 2 months ago we set up a township renewal training network, because we all have realized there are serious training needs in the townships amongst municipal officials of how to manage these integrated programs. And then amongst consultants, very poor service being provided by consultants to municipalities in terms of township renewal. So we are jointly designing a few training interventions for the next year. Just 3 or 4, and we will see what we do in the future. The themes are likely to be around township economies and around project management, those kinds of basic skills that are required. And we will pick specific people in each of the programs at municipality and provincial level that we invite for these sessions. That is an initiative that we have just started with Treasury and Cities Network and DBSA. Lastly, Chairperson, an overview, 2 slides of what this all means to us in the European ISRDP and our support partners. I have mentioned earlier on that we have to start integrating or mainstreaming our coordination structures into provincial and district structures working with provinces. That is something that you will find in our business plan for the year, and we have a project that we have designed to do that with the support of the governance branch. The second point is to facilitate a coordinated LED support program for the nodes, working closer with DTI and the presidency. This is also something that we have programmed already and started. On Friday, there will be the first working session between the presidency, PICAS, the DTI, and ourselves, the DTLG, to look at working more closely on providing economic development support to districts. But within DPLG, we thought we should also integration and coordination start in your own backyard, they say. So we have set up a joint working group between our LED unit, because it's their core function, not ours, and our unit. And after this working session, we are hoping to design a more strategic LED support program for DPLG, where we map out for the next 2 or 3 years exactly what are the packages of support we're going to be providing, specifically to the nodes, and then in general to districts, pulling together the experiences that we have now gained in the URPISRP through this project and helping to influence the work that our LED unit has done. I've talked already about the knowledge sharing program and learning events. This is also something that you will find in our business plans and our work program, that we will be designing a more coherent learning framework for the next 3 years. We are starting it in the URP because we've already started piloting a twinning partnership between Halashewe and the 2 Eastern Cape nodes. And in a few months' time, we will start with a similar program for the ISRDP. And then the support for the nodes to improve communication and community participation. This is also something that we will be focusing on a lot more from this year. Strengthen sector support to the nodes, DTI, agriculture, health, education. Those are examples. This is something that it is part of our normal work, and I'm suggesting here that it would be useful to get support from portfolio committee on this, I'm not sure what the modalities are, whether it's possible for this portfolio committee to call another department to account for what they are doing in the notes, but if that was at all possible, it's always useful to do that, to get insight from DTI or agriculture on what it's doing in the notes. We have a challenge in that we need to strengthen the political championship oversight of the program. There's a lot of initiatives and demands on ministers and deputy ministers' time, and it's a challenge for us to keep these programs on the agenda as a priority of these national political champions. As officials, it's very difficult for us to, for example, I can't call Mr. Manuel and ask what his plans are for Kylie Chamichel's place. It's difficult for us to do that. So we need the support of our minister to do the kind of checking and making sure that ministers are servicing their commitments to the nurse. And it's also useful to get support from the portfolio committee in that. Lastly, intervene decisively and quickly in certain cases, such as weak political leadership at nodal and provincial level, conflict between political administrators with IGR, in cases where this is weakening delivery. Conflict happens everywhere, and it's not in itself a problem at all. We have seen in certain nodes where there are conflict challenges, but the work carries on. But in cases where it is definitely impacting on service delivery and taking us back in terms of the IFRDT-URP, we need to intervene more decisively. And we are possibly not doing that so well at the moment. And we of course need the support of the Minister and Portfolio Committee to do that. We have seen in Maluku Apafung the challenges that one can have if we don't intervene. Lastly, just a reminder, a slide that members would have seen a few times, the budget. And I do this deliberately to show that we have a very, very tiny budget, which in itself is not a challenge. We get a lot done through very good partnerships that we have built with the business staff, with the European Union donor communities. And we have built quite good partnerships. But just a reminder of the scope of our budget and what we have to do. And then to say that we've had some downward adjustment of our budget in the last year, but this is mainly because of three vacant management positions. I have announced that we have fixed most of those challenges. The new DDG will start in 1st of July, is here today. It is endorsed by Cabinet. The executive manager for the URP that we've had two unsuccessful recruitments for, we have found the right person for the job. This person will start on the 18th of June. And then we have one vacant position for the IFRDP, which we have shortlisted, and the interviews will happen in July. So by August, we will have a full team in place. And then we have brought today with us the four new deputy directors, three male, female, and one male that we have recruited in the last year. That is how far our organogram will go up to deputy director level. And they all started in January 2007. Chairperson will notice that it's a very female-dominant team. There are two males in the team. We did not deliberately leave them at home. They have other commitments today, but they unfortunately could not be here. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. You've made Mom Kumete's day. She's smiling already. Okay. So good. Thank you very much, Leon. Members, before I give you a chance to ask questions and comment, so I'd like to say one thing to the department. as a request. You've made a lot of requests for political intervention. Here's ours to you, to DG and to the minister. We would like you to look at the budget vote debate in Parliament. It's limited. There's only so much time, and the minister only has so much time to be able to respond. So we would like you to look at what members said in that debate, and that the soonest meeting we can have together with yourselves and the minister to come and discuss those issues that were raised. In what members of the committee said, have responses from yourselves and the department, and then perhaps in those issues that are of a political nature, the minister must come and engage us with it. So that's a recommendation we are asking you to take to the DG and to the minister. We are doing it precisely as part of the request you are making to us. We have already made certain observations, and there are things that we would like to interact with you on, and I think what you have done is to create the space for us to be able to do this. That's my first comment and request to your presentation. I also just want to say that thank you very much. It's very useful. We appreciate especially the last part in which you state you make reference to the capacity of your section and the department that is dealing with this issue. It's a very important one. The material around the capacity of the state and the ability of the government to deliver on its mandate is an important one for us. Obviously, we are concerned about it, and we appreciate the fact that you made it our business to know what you're doing as we speak today. Thank you very much. I'll come back to my questions. Members, can you please make your comments and questions? And if you can help us all, let's make it very brief and crisp so that we must go at it for as much as we can. Please, all of us. Who wants to start? I think I'll allow Nkosiya, because I know you will give them a lesson of how to be brief. And then we will ask Jadim Shududu and Peter, and then Dorman. Now, Ms. Leon? Dorman was led the LAS and Plus Liga Regering and the Westcap. He is verwacht om voor ons te zeggen hoe komen we zijn niet een oprechte champion voor die nood waar hij gewerkt heeft. Okay, thank you, that order.
Chairperson, thank you very much, colleagues, honorable members, and madam from the our department and distinguished guests. Good morning. Well, sir, I think first of all, I must thank the DDG for this briefing. And, you know, she's informative, and also I think it will assist us a great deal in our oversight role. All I can say is that if, for instance, we would like to have knowledge on any of the nodal points that we have not touched upon, I would appreciate if you can have that undertaking, that you can actually provide us with that, because I found that those that we have reported off, on, will really assist us. The point, that second point, Chair, is this integrated sustained rural development program. That's my concern. We have been throughout insisting that there must be rural bias. Because, as we speak, many people in rural areas, they don't have free basic water, free basic electricity, precisely because there's no infrastructure. And unfortunately, in those nodes, these are the nodes where the poorest of the poor live, and therefore they need these much more. You have provided the urban renewal program very well. But there is an imbalance, in my view, because you're telling us that no, on the integrated sustainable rural development program, you're saying, well, there are vacancies since December 2006, and then the interviews will be sometime in July. And also promising us in the same breath that by July, the study is underway on the lessons that have been learned and will be given in sometime in July. It just has to express that how I wish that when you report on these two programs, because bearing in mind that some of us, you know, are coming from those areas and really would love to see that at least some priority is given. Thank you, Chair.
Madam Shudulu?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I'm just adding my voice to what Ngozi said. Chairperson, maybe I should start from the recommendation that you made. I had already noted a question before the department could say it, in terms of knowing that you are the coordinating structure within the presidency. I was saying, have you presented this proposal? But here is it that you confirm that you are going to table this. Because my worry exactly has been that the challenges we face practically on the ground. This question of Chairperson clustered approach, integrated approach, is a problem in terms of development. We have engaged a lot in the Spanish public works and many others. So I'm saying that's an area. And I wanted to say, with the curiosity we've had in our visit, I also sit in the Committee on Transport. I think we have a challenge here, Chairperson, of the 2010. The 2010 preparation is an advantage in terms of how best also you can benefit from that. Because where the provincial cooperation with the municipalities hosting cities, there has been proof that there is progress. I'm just saying, because that's where we pick up a problem. The other big challenge is municipalities in general, and I'm just trying to say that. Chairperson, where there is a node, it looks like normal municipal responsibilities are put aside. I'm saying there's a culture that, in my understanding, knows where identified to fast track as an add-on, as a bonus to certain, not as a replacement of the day-to-day. So I'm saying it's important that you make sure that you communicate unambiguously to municipalities. We have a great example where, for instance, something will be done and then people will be referred to the renewal project and not their responsibility. The last one I'm trying to circuit is the culture of municipalities, and because the report you have also is solely dependent on the quality of report you get, because you can't be everywhere every time. There is a culture of responsiveness to your questions as opposed to accounting on what people have done. And this you can pick up when you go through even IDPs or documents that people respond on. You'll find that the format is as it is reflected in terms of their mandate. It's like a classroom situation as opposed to a person reporting of, if you have done it, report on it. If you haven't done it, don't report on it. So I just want to stop there. Thank you.
Chair, I've got a lot of questions, but now I have to be very brief, so I'll cut it down very quickly. No.
Yeah.
that dictator there cut
yes.
through all my few questions.
Yeah.
Just ask members. I'm not suggesting you should cut any of your questions.
Okay, well, I'm making it quick anyway.
Jim?
I found the report very interesting. It's a good one for the department. Especially the latter half, we're focusing on how to improve things in the future. But just a few comments and questions. This study now, I mean, this report to us concentrates on the four nodes mentioned here, but I'd like to get some sort of sense of performance, an assessment of all the nodes. I mean, can you, for example, say to us that of the nodes, you know, a quarter are doing a fine job, and a third are doing a bum job, and a few in the middle, or is it one or two doing an excellent job and the rest are useless? Some sort of sense of ranking of all the nodes would be useful. I don't know if it exists or not, but I'd like that. Secondly, Chair, this is a question I asked before, very unfair question, but I do, you know, believe it's, to me it's still valid, because if you're doing an impact assessment of a nodal approach, as opposed to an impact assessment of the nodes, those are two different things, and I'm still interested in the form of those. In other words, when we went, for example, to Alexandra, and we looked at what they were doing in Alexandra, one got a good sense that the delivery was improving in Alexandra because of the nodal approach to what they were doing. Not precise. But if you went to Maludi or Kofong, for example, and you looked at the water delivery, you'd say it's got nothing to do with the nodal approach to government. It's just that it happened to get something right. And they did it despite, not because of, a nodal approach. And that's the sort of sense I'm trying to get. In other words, how successful, get some sort of impact assessment of the nodal approach of government, this program, as opposed to simply a quantitative issue of delivery on the ground, that distinction. And then also related to that, the third issue would be, I would imagine, I don't know if it's true, but I'd imagine there are parts of the country where you do get coordinated, sectoral, integrated kind of delivery, which are not part of the nodes. I mean, you don't have to have a nodal approach to deliver in an integrated fashion. If you take a city, I don't know all the areas of the country, but if you take Durban, for example, within Durban, there are nodes, but there are areas which are not nodes. Now, I'm not quite sure why one would select, say, Kwamashu for a node and not Cato Manor or whatever. But if you take a place like Cato Manor, there is an integrated approach to delivery. Are there areas of the country, for example, which could be role models for delivery, which are not necessarily part of this rural or urban nodal approach? That's my question. I would imagine they exist, but I'd like to get some clarity on that.
Mr. Chair, a couple of quick ones here. There was a slide about housing delivery in rural areas not meeting people's satisfaction because of, you know, undermining traditional families and so on and so forth. I was wondering whether there had been any approach to the Department of Housing to review its approach to housing delivery to meet people's expectations in that way. The other issue, this whole LED thing. I've often thought that this very easy to use a slogan like LED is very glib. Well, we have high expectations, or if we rephrase it that way, there are very high expectations that LED strategies at a local level, particularly in weak, poor areas, are going to deliver some significant economic development. And I wonder to what extent we've been over optimistic as to what can happen in many of these rural areas. Or the weak, very weak urban areas. And I'm very encouraged by the project engaged in of identifying specific economic opportunities and trying to package them in some way to facilitate private or public sector investment to deal with these matters. Because I think it's an extremely complex matter. I personally feel that much of what's happened at the LED level is not really sustainable. It's really just things that are done almost in a pro forma exercise, but they're not really contributing meaningfully to real economic development, which is sustainable. So I wondered whether, for example, the government took an approach some time back, as I understand it, that public sector investment should be focused on areas where the country would derive maximum economic benefit, as opposed to the communities directly involved receiving direct benefit themselves. So, I mean, there's been a switch of emphasis in public investment. I'm wondering what impact that has on the nodes, because it seems often one wanting to have investments here in areas which are often backwaters, in inverted commas, and where you're not really, you don't see them as areas which are, certainly the rural side anyway, as essential anything.
And so is there some sort of tendency that they fall off the radar screen in terms of the public investment? That's my concern there.
Chair, a quick one here.
Oh, yes, this whole issue of lack of coordination and the need now to mainstream institutional integration of you know, by sector departments and so on. I'm surprised it's taken so long, I must admit. I mean, this whole program started in 2001. It's been now 2007, and we're saying that because of lack of coordination, because of sector departments not buying in, and whatever, there's now a need to concentrate on mainstreaming the coordination. Why has that not been a priority until now? And what has been done within government as a whole to put pressure on those sector departments which don't perform, provinces which fail to perform? Has there been sufficient pressure on them to do things?
Chairperson, there was a comment somewhere, I can't see where it is here, about housing.
Oh, yeah. If municipalities don't take control of the housing budget, then it's very difficult for them to deal with their housing needs. I'm puzzled by this in the sense that, and I don't know to what extent it works, I'm not associated with housing much, but as I understand it, most of the metros are responsible for housing. Certainly they have an constitutional entitlement, and that was my real question. The question I'd have is to what extent have, because the Constitution says that any municipality which has the administrative capacity to perform a function should have that function assigned to it by a province. Now, the question I put is, to what extent has there been any strong pressure exerted by those capable municipalities to in fact have housing in particular assigned to them and to take over the budget so that they can perform their task better? And I think that was it. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you very much, Chair. I am very positive about the whole policy around NOES and what the government has tried to do in this regard. Really, I mean, this for me is the correct approach to concentrate on those areas that were left behind and make a difference. I'm really not too critical about this because it's a very difficult process and it takes time for coordination and getting things off the ground. So really I am very positive about the whole approach. I actually don't want to see more nodes. I think we've got enough work on our hands here and we should rather concentrate on this and get it right here. And let the other areas take that as examples and government departments learn from this and also implement it in other areas. And of course, I am very worried about the rural areas. Other members also refer to that. I mean, that is where you really have a very big challenge. For me, it's that the urban renewal can do their own thing and they're better off and it's quicker to respond and get results. But the rural ones, it is really worrying what is happening there and what can be done. Chair, on my day, I've opened with Deputy Minister Angana Crafts and Arts Center in Beaufort West. We were there and that was one of the first projects, and you know, and that actually demonstrates what I want to say is that how viable was it, you know. What I've learned in the meantime is it didn't create that many jobs. We had so much hope of such a project. So I want to that is exactly the challenge. I want to ask two questions in general. And the one is the economic development in those areas. It seems to me we need a major input and a real grand plan and impact from outside, you know. As the previous speaker said, if we look at slide 9 about your findings, less support has made no significant impact on long-term livelihoods and sustainable job creation. And even later slide also you say it's actually just to do something for the poor. It isn't really created economic development and so on. So that is a big question. It seems to me that we've learned this through this whole process that we really need in this country a big implementation of rural economic development grant schemes, that we have to keep the people there and get things going. Those people that are there on their own and I almost want to say the natural possibilities aren't that big, and it's very bad for our country, the influx to the cities for our whole country's development. So that is my big question about what can we do there, or what is your, is there anything that you can suggest? And then just the last thing is the PIM centers. I've got a bonnet, it might be about those, and I don't see anything reflected in. We brag that we've established them in all the districts and in all the nodes specifically, but what I've learned from them is that the people that are employed there are not skilled for the job they have to do. You know, they have to be super centers. I think they can make a difference, and things can rub off from them to the local communities and municipalities. And it seems to me that they are not staffed properly, financed properly, and with the right people. And I wanted to ask you to give us a sense in our about what's going on with the PIMs. In our report to Parliament, we express our concern about the multipurpose centres, and I think there should also be a linkage there between the two. Or what? It seems to me, and I must be critical, we want to establish both, and perhaps we need just one high-level expertise center that can really make a difference. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I've got only one quick concern, Chairperson. On page 6, slide 12, there is where there is research done in this notes preliminary impact assessment. Somewhere down there, Chairperson, it says rural clarification needed for those structures named there in some cases. But when you turn to page 10, slide 20, Chairperson, there is another structure again there called community care workers. Now, my concern is, Chairperson, if the department says there still needs a clarification on these structures, now there is an extra one. Can they maybe elaborate as to say what is the duty of these community care workers compared to CDWs, ward committees, and all that? Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry.
Okay. No. Thank you.
This time the PAC must precede the AEC for a change.
Yeah, the PAC rules. Okay, thanks, Mr. Chairperson, and the presenters, Benedict. Thank you for the presentation. Mine, I think it is just going to be stating certain facts here. Maybe out of those facts you will pick up what are questions, and some which are comments, maybe you just leave them as they are. I have realized that when you look into what happened after we passed that Intergovernmental Relations Act, there has never been a set time frame for these government structures to form the forums which they are supposed to form in order that there should be a harmonious working relationship between those structures. And I think that is the point of concern which it must be looked at, because if it is just being left as open as it is, you know, this term will pass and another term will come. Because I realize that there are, in some other areas, you know, including the nodes, as we have stated with Malusia Kofum, a strange relationship between maybe the district, the local municipalities, you know, people fighting over the turf, and some also using the argument of the constitution that I'm not responsible to you. So I think this thing needs to be fast-tracked here. I've also realized the issue of the non-conformity with government policies. For instance, we realize that even in the nodal areas there, that policies such as the expanded public works, municipalities, they do not conform to the policies, to the principles of these policies. And I think this then defeats the end of what actually this program was set for, that the creation of jobs, yeah, and an alleviation of poverty. So I think that is another area which also needs to be looked at, because without we do a lot of work towards the formulation of these policies and also passing on the legislation. But if these are not then being implemented, you know, to the letter at those levels, it is going to be very difficult for us to be able to see whether their strengths and weaknesses here. In your presentation,
just before you step off, you don't want to give here one or two examples of what you just said.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I think recently, I was in Malutia Kofum recently, in Malutia Kofum District Municipality. And I think that is an example which I could make on nodal areas. And well, in an area which is not a nodal area, I think in Machali, where, you know, the municipalities would definitely, you know, explicitly say that they are not yet ready to implement the policy of the expanded public works. They are still busy trying to get their house in order for them to implement that. In your presentation, the issue of basic services, I think especially here in these nodal areas, as we are now concentrating on nodal areas, we needed to get clarity as to do we see ourselves going to meet the set targets. Let me make an example, the issue of the target eradication. What do we see in these nodal areas? Are they going to be able to meet the targets set for December this year, that the target should be seen to be eradicated into such areas? Yeah. Lastly, I think the issue of the ward committees versus community development workers and councillors. I think here, I would like just to get maybe your proposal as to how you could advise us, especially when it comes to this issue of the allowances. We know that ward committees are not being given any allowance, and the issue of the morale, because now you will realize that there becomes now this issue whereby others feel that no, we are just being brought to come in and assist where the others are being given allowances. So I think any type of a reward, I just want to get maybe advice from yourself as to what are you proposing to assist us here. Lastly, I'm sure it will be the issue of economic development. I've realized that in the nodal area, there is a lot of fronting there. You know, it is going to be very difficult for those emerging contractors there, you know, to assist towards the economic development. So, what measures really could be put in place, you know, to assist towards preventing such type of issues. And the other issue is the issue of the consultants. I've realized that consultants are making, you know, a kill in these areas here. Mostly of the most budget of these areas here is really, it is seen being going towards the side of the consultants than the major contractors themselves. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. I think the case you read my mind. I wanted to say exactly what you were saying. With regard to the emerging contractors, they've already covered that. That way, for a lot of fronting, and I don't know what government can do actually to identify this fronting, because a person comes to get a project, says I've got 1, 2, 3 black people and this percentage. But eventually, the very, you know, old contractors, even if he's not a black person, at the end of the day, the whole contract goes to him and the other people just get peanuts. So it's very difficult to try and say there is any skills transfer. You see, the ECWT, as he has already mentioned, is lacking in the municipalities. The departments actually, the regulations force them to budget in their budget some portion for EPWP. That should also happen in the municipalities, so as to enable them to have this skills transfer and also to train these emerging contractors. You know, in your assessment, you have mentioned of the Motherwell houses, 6,000, but you find 1,000 were fit for habitation. I think, as he has mentioned, if you get a project in such a node where houses are built and a consultant is being paid money, but at the end of the day, you find that there are those houses which the consultant or the project manager, who I think has been paid money, they are not fit for, you know, go into them and call them a house. I think something has to be done. You have mentioned of an intervention. You know, to so much money spent on consultants, and some of them are not actually doing their job properly. And then lastly, I want to speak about, you know, this integrated development, more especially in the rural areas, where we have a nodal point, where we say, you know, the president always mentions that if you have a project at a particular spot, let me give an example. If you build a clinic at a particular, even the rural area, but the Department of Public Works or Transport do not provide a road, you know, it comes to nothing, because it becomes very difficult for people to access the very same, you know, service that they should access. So these are the things that we need to, you know, as you go about, you know, trying to see whether these nodes are practicable or what are the shortcomings. These are the things that I think you have to look at. And finally, I just want to find out whether in your recommendations, for instance, if you recommend, I want to give you an example also. You have mentioned of Hoshani somewhere. We did not speak of that, but as I was just going through, I think it's page 22, which is supposed to be under the Department of Education. If nothing is done about that place to be actually attended to be developed, what are you doing to fast track the development of such a node with a different department? Thank you.
Good. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Mine is not so long. I would like to take this opportunity.
I am allowed to comment like that. You just say your thing. You get into trouble with members.
Okay, thank you very much. I'll take this opportunity to thank the DDG with a very good presentation, and I think the research that they've done is very good. Mine is also, I'm only focusing on the infrastructure, especially in the rural area under IFRDP. I was in Sikukuni land, the Sikukuni district municipality. I found out that
there is a serious problem with regards to the infrastructure pertaining to water, the water infrastructure and the electricity. And I'm asking myself if we don't have electricity and water there, how can we have a sustainable LED in that area? Because for the local economic development to be there, water is very essential. And the roads also, because if you don't have roads, and I don't think that the LED will succeed. And that's my main concern. And I just wanted to find out actually, because Sikukuni is being identified as one of the nodal points, actually, as to what is happening with regard to that. Because when I look, Khorobozda is part of Sikukuni. But in Khorobozdal there is water and there is a dam called Olifant and there is quite a lot of water. And people in Khorobozdal, they got a lot of water. But just outside Khorobozdal, Kahuko, there is no water. People are still drinking water in dams, in rivers. And it's just a distance of about 15 kilometers from town. And the local dam is just about 35 kilometers away. But those people around this area, they don't have it. And that is a serious problem.
Okay, thank you.
Well, that's why he's making a point, Chair.
You're not naming it correctly.
I was saying the machine was making a point.
Yeah.
When I remember, promised to be very short.
Thank you. Yeah, so that's basically what actually concerns me. But anyway, the research actually did point out some of the problems that they've just identified in all those nodal points. But I just wanted to find out as to whether what are they going to do where we have this kind of a problem, because we need this LED to work. Thank you very much.
Very much. Am I allowed to add? Okay. I would like to start where the last speaker ended. Speak a little bit about the research, the kind of, you haven't spoken to us about how you did it, who did it, you know, to give us a sense. In what way, I mean, how comprehensive is it? We would like to get a bit of sense about that. Now, let me also declare upfront that I was also like Domen, a provincial champion in the state, at some stage. And so, I want to raise questions that I, but also make some comments about some of the process. Firstly, you don't distinguish between national and provincial championship. That's important. That perhaps you need to do that. But when you say that in this area there has been weak championship, both, is it provincial? And in where you say they are successful in the Northern Cape, was it both or was it different? And so if you can just disaggregate that, would be useful. As part of the integration effort, one of the things that I feel was very interesting, there's a person called Jerry Masereka who worked for ESCO, who was seconded for ESCO. I really think an interview with that fellow, an exit interview, because I don't know whether if I may say so, would be very useful. And the distinguishing thing that he did, which was not happening in any of the other nodes, was how he mobilized the public entities to participate in the nodes. Coming from ESCOM, how they mobilize others like ESCOM and so on to come in to play their role in each of the nodes, which was a very interesting way to handle that stuff. Some structure that was relevant to pull in those was created, but I think because of what you refer to as leadership, toxic leadership, if I may add, led to the downfall of that initiative. So I would like you to talk about that if you can. But I also want to say that some of the comments you make, you see, like to illustrate the point, you referred to pulling and bringing real facts to bear on some of the observations you are making. If you say, if you, I'm using my language here, decentralize housing to municipalities in those nodes now, you would fast track and speed delivery in a number of other areas as well. But what we are not hearing, you are declaring it here, you are not giving us evidence. Okay? So even those, the Department of Housing, even if it, they would really be pleased to hear you say that indirectly, I don't know whether they really want to decentralize. But I know that, for example, they've been trying to, what is the word? To provide for municipalities to do that. But I think provinces are not so happy. Yes, with accreditation. The provinces are not so happy. What is the reason? To provide them with the evidence that will help them to push for that idea. I think that would be a useful thing. What we are saying is that let the evidence speak. It's not about individual persons and what they or they are not doing, but evidence suggests that if we did that, there's a major impact if it is managed at that level, because there are others that can do. And the area around justice, okay? By the way, just before I step off decentralization, this issue relates to other functions that lie in provincial and national departments. And whether in your observations from this research you're conducting is not providing us with evidence to use to question the location of some of the powers and functions. Okay? Because that should be what is coming out of this thing in a sense. Because we said the nodal approach is intended to help us learn how to work together as government. And one of those issues of working together is would be whether we have located powers and functions correctly somewhere else. So that would be a useful incident. Nkosi Nongonyana, you're a lawyer. In the issues around justice and so on, the South Africa was given a big compliment in the UNDP global report, I think 95 or 6. And they were saying when it comes to multilingualism, we are really leading. Especially we give excellent translation services, more than any other country in the continent. But they also observed there are some interesting witnesses. And they cited Kwaku, Malugia Pofu. They say that the magistrate, the prosecutor, they accused all are Sotho speakers, first home Sotho speakers. But now I'm saying this is their language, it's not mine. But they conduct their business in poor English, including the magistrate now and then interrupting the interpreter to help him with the correct interpretation of what they accused was saying and so on. Now, when you see the issue of access to justice is an issue in those cases. It includes questions of language. And this was an observation by an outsider looking at us and what services we are providing. So it's a very important issue of language and how it can serve as a deterrent, not deterrent, to prevent access to effective justice and so on. So, and it's interesting that it comes, you come at it from a different point of view, but illustrate the point that others observe too, in a sense. The very first starting point, the Department of Sports and Recreation. In a joint meeting of this committee with the Sports Portfolio Committee, the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Sports, Honorable Compel, complimented your TV for staying throughout that meeting, because he said that's not his experience with the Department of Sport. It's an absolute interesting coincidence that you are now telling us here that it's one of those that are not involved in the DSS. So you might want to say that maybe this is what he unknowingly spotted in his own work and so on. So it is a matter of concern that you are saying that they are not involved. The chairperson of the Portfolio Committee himself noted that observation, that it looks like there isn't too much keen involvement where it matters most in the integrated development. I think it needs to be raised there.
I just want to the joint framework that you talk about, I've seen it in GCIS, the nice packages. There. Just like at the SALGA Members Assembly, we saw the HIV AIDS strategy. But that's where we saw them. You see, we are members of the portfolio committee, so we bumped into them where you are dropping them off in community centers and so on. You never came to us to say we have completed this thing, this is what it is, and so on. So please, next time, even if you're doing it simultaneously, come and tell us about it first. Yeah, we haven't seen that formally. We never received a briefing from you around that issue. And so that would be helpful if you can do it as well. But there's one point I want to make. Talking about LED, has anybody, why shouldn't you be tracking down public sector runs that goes into these notes? And what they represent in terms of investment. In other words, your partners in business to know that this is what the public sector is spending towards business in these areas already. So if you are saying that municipalities in this area, for example, spend so much money, and these are the businesses that benefit from that activity in this area already now. Okay? In other words, what I'm pointing out is I don't understand why the provincial government and the resources it needs to use in those areas, sources it supplies from people who are not keen to play ball in those areas. So I'm saying we have serious leverage as the public sector united in these areas, and we are not using that. So part of the activities that must be undertaken deliberately so and so on, and this does not only apply in Node, but in every other municipality, is that we have half a billion rand of money that we spend in business here. But this very business that we are sourcing from is not playing ball in this area. Why is that appropriate? Why shouldn't we be asking them to act and behave differently? It's not like we are... the problem is if we are saying we must still work out some things to go and persuade them. Already now, the public sector is giving them resources to be alive as business. Okay? And all we are saying is that the municipalities, and in fact the public sector government, must begin to use its leverage in those areas in a manner that advances the poverty eradication agenda of government in those areas. So we are not doing enough to raise awareness of business of what the public sector is already doing, and they are not playing, they are not returning the ball. We are almost playing alone, in a sense, in that area. And that's not a game. So I just feel that we need to focus on that issue. I want to agree with Peter's frustration about our concern for integration and coordination that has not been happening, which is the requirement of the Systems Act. And that's why we introduced the integrated development plan. That a lot more needs to be done. I do not know why it remains an option anyway that these things are not in the performance agreements of this. You referred to contractual agreement in those areas, but I know that by contract, you were meaning contract with suppliers and so on and so on, and their management. You were not talking about contracts of Section 57 managers in their employment. And that, in fact, we would like to argue should be part of those contracts. When you speak about contractual arrangement, it must also be about the contracts of those who are employed in the public sector to carry out the public sector agenda that is agreed nationally and so on. It should not be an option. We should not be... And so this is where the weakness of implementation comes in. It is in our reticence, coyness about acting firmly to bring about implementation. My last point, Chairperson, you see, Treasury and the Neighborhood Fund,
Why? Has anybody ever asked why that money is in treasury? When treasury is not responsible for local government and for development. Who has asked that? Have you asked that? You are responsible for local government. So what we are asking is it's a very good initiative, theoretically, because we do need any resources that we can come across, that we can pull from wherever to speak to the national agenda as identified collectively. We have already done what you're asking us to do. We were meeting with the Department of Communications last week, in which they were briefing us about what they are doing, what they are planning to do. They've already done some interesting stuff and so on, and that's our agenda. Now, I assume members will agree that we are also going to call Treasury to come and talk to us about this particular one. The management of the financial flows and their effective management is an important one. But we think, I'm sure members would agree with me, that the responsibility for those funds must lie with those who are responsible for those functions. It's a very important one, and we must talk to Treasury to ask them to explain us why they don't think that's a good idea. Really, we would really want to know. They have a very important leverage to help us bring about certain things, but one of them is not managing those funds that way. This is my view. I hope the members of the committee do not have a different view on that. The DPRC has a tendency to start good initiatives and then let them float around and not follow them. This knowledge sharing stuff has long been around. For example, I remember that the Maludia Profum, the Thabo Mofutsanyane district hosted one of the district learning opportunities to look at, for example, they would choose a theme and so on. The one that was hosted by Thabo Mofutsanyane was to talk about the district management area. Now, you see, the reason I'm raising it is because we haven't had any report from you about those activities, of that knowledge sharing activity, of that particular body of work and so on. And the reason we are citing is that when we discuss districts in the context of the discussion of the functions of provinces and so on, we would be in a better position to do so if we had feedback on what the district themselves have learned in their working together collectively and sharing of those experiences, and not inquiry done by others who are not involved in the work themselves. That's important, but the one that comes from the practitioners themselves is very useful, especially because they are able to see we are supposed to do this, it's working well or it's not working well, and these are the reasons. This is what our colleagues elsewhere can do better to improve things and so on. So, what is happening? You said some things about but where is the continuation? And we believe that it was working with part of the GPSA's knowledge sharing facility. I can say this without contradiction, that there's very weak participation of local government in the annual public sector learning academy. Very poor local government input, and it's dangerous. So you can't blame those people who you say have no clue about local government, when you yourself don't attend opportunities to go and raise awareness about it in the appropriate forums that are created annually and so on. So we would like to see DPLG itself and SALGA really pulling their socks in terms of direct participation in that learning academy to spread awareness about the challenges of local government. It will not happen in and of its own. And I think we have already raised these questions about the other departments and so on. We will do. Obviously, we are going to discuss it here. Members, I suggest that in addition to what we have done today, at our next meeting, we must continue the discussion on our own about the report and then flesh through some of the recommendations that have been made and then take it up from there. Is that okay? Okay, so we will discuss further after hearing your responses, Ms. Leon, so that we participate in this thing. My final comment is you have excluded GCIS in the section that is going to discuss communication in the listing. I don't know why. Now, the reason I'm saying it also is that, you see, some of the problems are not lack of communication and marketing. That is, in fact, the problem, that you don't include dialogue. So some of the people are saying you don't want to spend time with them, hearing their views, their advice. Instead, you market stuff to them. This is a good brand using Sensodyne. Cleans your teeth better. But I don't have teeth, man. Why do you want me to use Sensodyne? You know what the fuck? I need something else other than this product because I don't have teeth. When I sleep, I must take off my teeth. So whatever. I don't know how that people live. So we need dialogue as a central component of intergovernmental relations. Communication is a problem, we agree. The other two important components of marketing and communication are equally important. But let's give dialogue the space it has in this relationship between the different parts of government. Thank you very much.
I'm overwhelmed. Chairperson, I actually want to respond to your very last comment because I thought it was very important about communication. We do have quite a close working relationship with GCIS. I think it's oversight that we did not put that down there. They have been very actively involved with our communication initiatives up to now. And I can say that we have contributed a lot to their starting to write and talk about developmental communication. Our team, the communicators that are here, work very closely with them. And your emphasis on dialogue, I think we got that message across at Alex as well, where they took us through their change in approach over the years, where they had a lot of focus on marketing Alex like Box of Omo, and they've now realized that developmental communication is very simply just about people talking to each other and creating platforms for people to talk to each other. And that is a message that we are strongly trying to get across to our communicators. Let's get the basics right from now on and just create discussions and opportunities for...
With leadership, we don't budge with communicators. It's actually not their problem, it's the leadership.
Yeah. And it's also our problem to make sure that people have the right information to be able to engage in dialogue. The Neighborhood Partnership Development Grant, we have initially felt quite wounded that the fund did not end up with EPLC. We thought it would have been a good match for the second phase of urban renewal to have had that fund kickstart the ideas. But we put our card in our back pocket and we've developed a good working relationship with them. They have the money. I think we have the ideas and the vision. So we are trying to work closely with them. But when you do engage with them, I think it would be useful to find out what the thinking was behind the grant being managed by National Treasury. Personally, I think there is a future at the end of the 10 years of the Urban Renewal Program to combine that grant with the Urban Renewal Program and have a new 5 or 10 year initiative with a big bulk of funding to drive township renewal in the country as a whole. So there's a potential to merge those two ideas. Knowledge sharing at the rural district, I will ask Pussy to talk a bit later about the initiatives at Maluti Apafum. The evidence to influence the issues of powers and functions. Where we are sitting now, Chairperson, it is a challenge for us. We were a program that was set up to influence policy, processes, ways of working. Implement on the ground, see what happens when policies hit the ground at a practical level, then make recommendations for adjustments or refinements of policy. We are now at a place where those policies are going to start being refined. The white paper on local government, provincial legislation, housing policy refinements. So it's a challenge for us to make sure that we have done proper and rigorous documentation of the work that we've done so that we can feed into those policy processes. Our research is not always as rigorous, I think, as it should be. And that's something that we have to pay attention to. But you spoke specifically about the case of housing, whether it will make a difference, whether the metros have accreditation is able to implement housing. Once again, the research that we do is not rigorous or credible enough to build a strong case for that, because we are using samples and we are using impressions, and we often reflect the views of the metro. In this case, their impressions that it would make a difference if they were in control of the housing power, the housing powers and functions. And they are not at the moment. I'm not aware of one metro that has been accredited. I know that there is a long process underway to get certain of the metros accredited, process driven by the Department of Housing. The chairperson also talked about how to get municipalities, the public sector in general, municipalities specifically, to realize and use the power of their public investment. In the new LED, comprehensive LED support program that we're going to be focusing on this year, this is something that we want to look at, working with municipalities to help them to get the basics right, use their investment, their procurement system, their supply chain management as the very basics of trying to get benefits to communities and local benefits. It's something that we have possibly overlooked. It's the simplest thing to do, but we might have been going for more interesting, elaborate responses instead of focusing on that basics. It also links to the research on the economic profiling was done by a company called the Monitor Group. It's an international research agency that draws people from all over the world and South Africans, economists, researchers. They were employed by the Business Trust to do this work. They spend an extensive amount of time in the nodes and interviews. And if you do get a copy of a detailed profile, at the back of every profile will be a list of every single person that has been spoken to, how many days have been spent in every place. And so it's very, very well documented in terms of who was consulted, who was not consulted, how much time was actually spent in the field. And when you look at that, you can get a sense of the depth of research that has been done. In a general, almost a little excerpt report that they wrote for us, they said something very interesting their impression was that in some of the rural nodes, instead of driving big economic development support programs, and instead of focusing on a lot on coordination, we might get better results if we just focus on the basics, meaning make sure that there is a local authority with all its basic systems that are functioning, and put our energy into that instead of integrating around a weak foundation. Focus on getting the basics right. Coordination, integration, economic development will be a next level in a way of support. And that is one of the recommendations that they've given to us, just their insights, having gone around the country and spent a year doing these investigations. And it's something that we have to think about. There was many questions asked about fronting and in the node. It's not something really that we focus on in GPLG, or that is my expertise. So I don't feel very confident to answer that. But about the EPWP and municipalities not complying, I think in the last year you will find that the national unit, the EPWP coordination unit, they have realized that they need to be a lot more direct and hands-on in municipalities if they're wanting to get this program going. I know for a fact that they have received additional funding from National Treasury last year to beef up
their coordination function at national level. And so you will see them being a lot more active in the municipalities and in the provinces, a lot more on the ground to make sure that we get maximum benefits out of the EPWP program. I haven't been part of the MTF, the MTEC hearings. I know that they made a pitch to beef up their coordination function, and I think they've been successful in doing that. It's right that municipalities cannot be forced to implement the EPWP with their own funding, but there are other ways of doing it. In the MIG grant, conditional grant, the Ministry of Infrastructure grant managed by DPLG, there are conditionalities in that grant written in by national government where a certain percentage of the MIG funding has to be used for EPWP labor-intensive projects. And it is possible with all national transfers or provincial transfers to put in place conditionalities like that to make sure that the EPWP is being implemented. There was a question asked about the role clarification between community development workers, community liaison officers, and then the other one was community health workers. I think the role, the challenges between those structures is maybe just as a result of it being new, community development workers having been introduced. And as I said, in places like Motherwell and Alfredsdorp, those teething problems where people were falling over each other's feet a little bit and trying to assert their roles and responsibilities, those teething problems have started to be sorted out. So the other one that we mentioned there that might have seemed like a new function was actually community health workers, which is something that I think we are all aware of. Linked to that was a concern about the funding of ward committees and allowances for ward committees. What are we doing about allowances for ward committees? It is on the priority list of things to do for DPLG this year, not as part of our unit, but in our public participation unit, to do some policy or guideline work around the funding of ward committees. Every single MPO that we have been to around the country, we were given the instruction that we need to do urgent work about this. It is a source of conflict and tension around the country, and it's definitely something that we are working on. But also to alert the members that there are municipalities and districts around the country who are on their own, have come up with funding models. Some of the MPO that we've been to where ward people are compensated for travel expenses or they're giving meeting allowances. In the absence of strong guidelines or policy, there are municipalities who have put systems in place to support ward committees. Mr. Doman asked about the PIM centres, what is happening to the PIM centres. The idea with the PIM centres was that they were set up, supported with a special grant, the Municipal Systems Improvement Grant, and that over time they would be absorbed into the district. And that is still, I think, the vision. So it doesn't mean that the PIM centres have died or the model is not of use anymore. I think the opposite of that is true. The shared, we are using different language now. When we talk about the shared services model that we are doing work around, it's talking about the same thing. It's talking about the PIMs, but possibly a new generation of PIM centers. The shared services model, if members are aware, we're starting to look in areas where there's severe capacity constraints. And it's not possible to have an engineer and an audit committee and an accountant in every municipality. We're looking at a model where we can have a cluster of expertise at a district level and have a shared service. So an audit committee that is shared by 5 municipalities in the district, and a water engineer that is shared by. And the PIM centres, I think, would be the foundations of a model like that. So it hasn't necessarily died. It's going through a slight hibernation or a change of character. There is a general comment about the rural nodes that we really need to up our game as CPLG, and we need to put a lot more attention on the rural nodes and make sure that we have a rural bias. That is something that we are aware of, Chairperson, and I'm sure that the new DDG is taking notes on that, because it's something that we will take into account this year. One of our possible weaknesses has been that we have a very small unit and a significant area to cover, and we simply have not been set up to provide the intensity of support that is required. In the urban nodes, it's easy for me. I go for 2 meetings to Durban, I get a result out of those 2 meetings. In the rural nodes, you go for 2 meetings, you can spend a lot of time, very intense support to get a similar result. So we are not quite set up for the intensity of support. What we have neglected to do is to use our partners better. We have the Independent Development Trust that is tasked with supporting the rural nodes. We have possibly not used them to their maximum capability. And that is something that I think will be on our priority list this year, that we need to exploit that resource a lot more to the benefit of the rural nodes.
Busi, do you want to?
Busi is the ICDP chief director, and she will answer questions that are a bit more specific, more detailed than I could do.
Thank you, Chair. There was a question initially that was asked on whether we presented the work report. Yes, we did present in preparation for last year's July, definitely, the results of the impact assessment studies. Actually, the request had come from FOSAT that we do that study. The work on economic development was also presented there. And as and when we do other studies or compile reports, we actually report through FOSAT to cabinet half yearly in July and in January. So most of the work and some of the guidance actually comes from FOSAT in terms of what we're doing. Then there was a question about 2010. Most of the host cities are in the provinces where, or are in the areas where there are rural urban nodes. But DPLG has employed someone to actually do work related to 2010. And one of the things we're exploring is the stadia that will be used for training of the people who will be playing in the host cities, and looking at how then the rural nodes can benefit from those. But in addition to that, all provinces have actually indicated that the district must establish what they call fan parks. For example, Bushbuck Ridge is one of the nodes will be using their stadium as a fan park, and we're looking at then other benefits that we can use or opportunities that we can exploit out of those practicing or training stadia in the fan park. Then the issue is, have we ever done performance assessment of all the nodes? Yes, currently we're finalizing work based on the criteria that was used to identify the nodes. I can just indicate in summary without going into detail. Nodes like Central Karoo is always at the bottom in terms of poverty. In other words, they're doing very well in terms of delivery of services, although they still have challenges in terms of economic development. Followed by Halahadi, and then Malusia Pupong is the third from the bottom. If I say bottom, then it means they are doing reasonably well compared to the other nodes. What we picked up is that generally, for example, in all the nodes, poverty has gone down by 2.2%, compared to when we used the criteria initially in 1996. And we repeated the 1996 criteria when we realigned the boundaries of the provinces recently. We also picked up, for example, that in 1996, Cocoon was actually on the top, the highest in terms of poverty, but now it has gone down to number 4, and OR Tambo is now at the highest. And I think we'll understand it's because of the population numbers, but also because of the realignment of the boundaries have got effect on the population. One of the issues we considered in the criteria was the population numbers. So there's been a shift in population numbers because of the realignment of boundaries. I think I've answered indirectly then the question about role models, because I would say really notes like Halakadi with the political support that they had, those are some of the notes that we can use as role models. Central Karoo, in terms of service delivery, there you go to their water and sanitation, they're at 98. You go to electricity, they're at 90-something. So, yes, there are nodes that are role models, particularly on the social side, but we still work more on the economic side. The issue of the housing and undermining tradition, I think we cannot also generalize it to all the communities and the municipalities, because it was we picked this up in Maluti Apofong, and also even in that case they indicated that they interviewed one community that said they were consulted by the municipality, and they said they didn't want this type of housing and the housing were built anyway. So, but I think I just want to caution that we can also not generalize it to all the nodes and the municipalities. I think the question about municipalities taking control of the housing budget, it's a provincial function, housing, but the Department of Housing is in the process of actually establishing whether municipalities have got the capacity so that they can accredit those municipalities that have got the capacity to take over the housing function. An example would be Mubani, for example. I think about 10 projects were actually stopped because it was not working very well in terms of the service providers in terms of the project. So they are looking at all those issues before they can decide which one they can accredit. They started with the process last year already. And then there was the issue of the relationship between health workers and the CDWs and all that. In the social sector cluster program of action, you've got the social aspect of the expanded public works program, where you get your early childhood development, you get your community health workers, you get your community home-based care workers. Now, what the cluster decided yesterday, last year, was to do a study which they called the harmonization. In other words, they looked at all these community workers, whether they are CCWs and whatnot, and they are proposing a policy of actually harmonizing, even in terms of the stipend that they receive, in terms of the services that they provide. But they are all, except for the CDWs, they are all forming part of the expanded public work program, the social aspect. But related to the issue related to the payments made to community development workers, we'll remember that the community development workers are actually public servants. They are trained through SAMDI, they are employed by provincial local government. And the question was, what advice would we give? I think what has come up in all the discussions we have is that perhaps we need to ensure that community development workers are actually employed at municipal level instead of province, because they are viewed with suspicion. Sometimes they are not welcomed by the municipalities. Sometimes municipalities are not really sure of the kind of training that they receive because they are sitting in the provinces. So that could be part of the proposals one would make. But they are actually not the core responsibility of DPLC. That DPLC is responsibility. DPLC is a partner in implementing this program. Now, there is a big issue about basic services and infrastructure, also considering areas like the Kukuni, but also considering the rural nodes as such. Yes, it's a challenge, and perhaps one needs to go back to say, we also faced with a challenge which we are beginning to try to explore through the midterm review that we are doing now. When the program was introduced, we as the PSU were supposed to be more on the approach on how to do things differently, on how to integrate. But even at cabinet level, we have to report on service delivery. And sometimes service delivery is actually not sitting with us. And it's sitting with other departments. So we find that even if we can answer some of the questions, but some of them could be better answered by some of the departments concerned. But where it concerns the Kukuni specifically, we've also picked up that, you know, like Hobles Dal is town, services will be better provided in town. You go to our Tambo, King Sabata Dalinde will actually benefit better than Kukuni, for example, and the other municipalities that are far from the town in a rural node. And you also find issues like, you know, the staff, the capacity of the municipality. The Kukuni did a Section 78 report where they were assessing whether they can implement some functions. And you find that one municipality is sitting up with about, say, five staff members who can work in the area of provision of water, while another municipality is sitting with just one. And the shared services model that Benedict is talking about, we hope we can be able to solve that problem. But since there is no infrastructure, then what we picked up, particularly the rural nodes, that most of them have actually started providing alternative services in terms of provision of water, your water tanks, your issue of protecting the springs in the community so that people are actually getting clean water even from the springs. I know, although I don't have department that details, that draft is actually looking at re-looking at the formula and the approach to provision of infrastructure and services, particularly in the rural areas. We're asked to just say which political champions, is it national or provincial? If I go to Northern Cape, I would say the national and both the provincial are actually contributing and are visible in the node. If I go to Eastern Cape, we've had only two national political champions. Actually, one has been in all the nodes. The second one has been in only one node. I'm talking about the current year. The provincial, we have the change of the provincial political champion. That's another challenge we experience. The MEC changes. We first have to go back and inform the MEC that we're a political champion and what is it that is involved in being a political champion. In Mpumalanga, we've had two national political champions that have been very active, but they've been affected by the realignment of boundaries. So they needed us to reconfirm that since the boundaries have been realigned, they are still political champions and we're working on that. But in the past, in the previous years, those two have been very active. The provincial, again, the MEC has just changed, and we need to go back now and talk to the current MEC. When we still had cross boundaries, the same political champions of Limpopo were the political champions of Mpumalanga. So again, they've been affected by the realignment of boundaries. The MEC is not clear whether she really goes to the nodes. That's one of the things we're trying to establish. Western Cape, we've had one national political champion, and the provincial political champion is in visiting. KZN with real challenges, and I think Bernadette was a bit soft in terms of KZN. I think that's one of the provinces where we'd also need help. Compared to Mpumalanga, there's real power. There, you know, the issues of capacity, but the KZN, there's a tendency to do things their own way also. So only one node in KZN, Ugu, has seen the national political champion visiting monthly, but the others, the last four political champions about 2 years ago, the provincial political champion will go and do, but I think we'd need another discussion to go to detail about KZN, but we'd need assistance there. The same kind of assistance there that we need with Malusi Apofong. Free State, the provincial has been very supportive, provincial political champion. The national two national political champions have visited. Actually, all three, The third one is the Minister of Health, and that's what she's been ill recently, so that's why she's not been joining us in visiting Maludia before. I think I've spoken about boundaries and all that. The issue of powers and functions, but also related to national departments, for example, was made of education. What was picked up is that sometimes, partly because of the realignment of boundaries, there's been misalignment of national department boundaries. But also, even where that did not happen, like education, if you go Eastern Cape, for example, their boundaries are not the same as the district boundaries. And those are some of the things that would one would say national departments need to consider. I think most of the questions then were answered by them, unless we skipped one or... Oh, yes. Yes, Jerry, we know about the... It was the national something, NSMP. But the challenge were both, yes, both political but also technical. They were not only from the municipality side, they were also even from ESCOM and from the other state-owned enterprises. And we decided then at DPLG that we need to find a way of coordinating all state-owned enterprises. But yes, we are aware of the program that it had benefits, but there were also challenges and that were also not taken positively even by other state-owned enterprises.
But the comment, I think, is appreciated that whatever challenges there were, we need to interview someone like that to find out exactly what the ingredients are for making a structure like that work and what makes it not to work so that we can replicate.
Yes, but the principle is also that often we speak about government departments and hardly ever about public entities and their role. And if you are saying that they've got this big developmental role to play, including foundations that they have, would make a huge difference if they can do that in other areas as well. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, ma'am. I think this has been very useful. We appreciate it. And we will take this, what you have told us, to digest it. Members, at our next meeting, I have instructions from our boss that he insists we must discuss the following things at the next meeting, which will be the last meeting of the second term. Let me start with this last one. We have to discuss and adopt a report. I'm conflating two things. So let me finish with our next meeting first. We have to discuss the adoption of committee reports, adoption of the budget report vote. Vote 5, I hope you have read it, we suppose you have done it before. Please reread it so that when we come next, we do it quickly. And our visit to the node, that report, we have to adopt it. Let's not conflict it with today's discussion. It's a different discussion, but it's linked. And then the minute of today, so that's what we're going to have to do. Please let us all be there for those meetings. We have to postpone the workshop that was apparently in negotiations between the CEO of the National House and our secretary here, Llewellyn Brown, which was meant to be on the 19th, for later scheduling. Part of the reason is that, unfortunately, I will not be there next week. But also, we thought we want to go to, to give it as much time as possible with all role players present and also prepare sufficiently ourselves. We need to have a discussion before that workshop to address through some of the issues that we want to take there. We can begin to flesh some of those things next week briefly. And, of course, then the other one that we have to reallocate is the briefing on the IDP process and so on. That was also on the agenda, so we'll have to do that. So that's the stuff that we're going to have to do. I hope this is okay. Any query? Is that okay, members? Okay, thank you very much. That's agreed to. Chief, you've got your instructions carried out. Thank you very much. To the department, thank you again. And we hear you on the issues you say we must look at, support and so on. But we've made requests to you as well. Now, please tell Sabi, who is the ministry's parliamentary officer, to join his colleague from the department regularly at our meetings. Tell him it's an order from the chairperson of the committee, not a request.
Tell him we would like to see him here regularly. We know that because it's important, we would like to facilitate ease of communication and so on, and when he's there, it's better. We would appreciate that. I want to restate that the meeting that we're asking for to come and discuss what we said in the budget vote is that we would like to discuss the quality, the kind of interaction we must have in addition to the issues of substance. We will discuss those things, but also we would like to discuss other issues that are important to the team. So let's make it an important priority. At the earliest term, Llewellyn Brown would be with all of you, must facilitate that we have that meeting as early as possible so that we go through that stuff to map out for the next period before we reach the next point. And that's going to be the purpose for that meeting, and it's important for us. But thank you very much. You are all invited for lunch behind me. Thank you. The meeting's adjourned.